discussing how contractors can finish strong and finish well when they decide to exit their business. This is the Contractor Succession Podcast.
Welcome to the Contractor Succession Podcast, where our focus is on helping contractors finish strong and finish well when they decide to exit their business. However, we also discuss how contractors are building their businesses, so it is not only valuable when it is time to leave, but also it's a great business to operate on a daily basis. So along with me today is my partner in Contractor Succession, Mr. Scott Good. Hi, Scott. How are you today?
Wonderful, Marty. Great to be here.
Great to be here. And it's going to be a great conversation with our guest today. And our guest is Denise Logan. Hi, Denise. Welcome.
Hello. It's nice to be with you fellows today.
Yes. For those who can see us or watching this on YouTube or video, you see that we are color coordinated today. Now, I don't think there was a plan there, but everybody looks great on this call today. All right, let me introduce Denise Logan. Her book, by the way, is called The Seller's Journey. We're going to talk about that, but here's my introduction for Denise Logan. And she knows that to business owners, selling a business is more than a transaction. To them, is an emotionally fraught period of transition filled with unexpected highs and lows, with no clear vision of what waits at the end for them and their family. Her passion for this work is colored by her own experience of being an unprepared business owner who made an abrupt and choppy exit from her company after ignoring the signs that it was time for several years. So, Denise Logan, maybe we should start with that, as you describe it, that you're an unprepared business owner who made an abrupt and choppy exit from your company. Maybe we should start there.
That's such a good place to start. Maybe I'll give a little bit of lead up to it.
Okay.
So, in my early life, I was a mental health professional, and then I was a lawyer. Sometimes I joke that if I'd been a good mental health professional, I would have kept myself from becoming a lawyer. But obviously, I went down that path. You know, I reached a point where my own firm had grown to a significant size, and I knew I wanted to leave, but I couldn't figure out how to make that happen. So probably 3 years or more before I exited, I had started talking about it with other people, saying I was burned out, I was tired, I didn't know how to exit, I also didn't know how to stay. You know, I think culturally, we are often encouraged to just ride through the burnout. And honestly, I wish there'd been someone to help me through that. So here's the gist. I'll give you two pieces of what happened for me. I was part of a trade group, and I'd been on the board of directors for this organization for several years, and they did a facilitated networking event one night. You know, they wanted us to know each other better. So they put us all in a conference room, like on a Tuesday night in Alexandria, Virginia. And, you know, your listeners are probably making the same face we all are. Oh, really? We're going to have this leader walk us through. And she makes us stand in a circle. And then said, introduce yourself without using any traditional moniker. So I couldn't say, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a lawyer, none of that. I had to say something that was about who I was outside of those roles. So as it was working around the circle, you know, one person says, I play the harp at bedside in hospice. I was like, well, that's something. And then the next person speaks and, you know, he's rebuilding a car, in an antique car in a garage as a surprise gift for his 16-year-old son or for his son's 16-year-old birthday. And I'm thinking, that's something. And all along, I'm thinking, I don't have anything. All I have is my business. It had really taken over every part of my life. So as it was moving around the circle, honestly, I started to get a little anxious. I was like sweating through my blouse. And I took my purse and excused myself to go to the ladies' room. And when I exited the ballroom, I realized the ladies' room is to the right and the parking lot is to the left. And I bailed. not a good thing. But I was so worried about being in front of my peer group and realizing I was about to say the only thing I have is my business. I drove home that night in the rain, crying, realizing I need to do something about this. I think some of your listeners can probably relate to that moment where you realize, I don't know who I will be without this business. And it's taken over such a big chunk of my life. Then I took some figure skating lessons. I did a whole bunch of things that we'll probably talk about on another podcast at some point. But eventually I did reach the point where it was time to exit. And I did a super ugly, choppy exit because I didn't know how to leave well. And I didn't have someone to help me in that process. I merged my firm with a Baltimore firm, got rid of my house, and bought myself a motorhome. And I ran off for what I thought would be 6 months and turned into several years. You know, when I came off the road, and that's a whole fun story for another topic too, but I traveled all over North and Central America. And when I, while I was out on the road, one of the things that I saw is that people would say, so what did you do? Right, that question, what do you do, is often a social pegging question. And I started to answer that question with, what do you think I did? I let other people comment on who they saw in me because truly I'd lost who I was at that point. When I came off the road, I joined a friend's business. No, you go.
Okay. Well, it's just interesting, you know, that you let them what they saw. But this was even years after you left your business. You still hadn't kind of figured it out.
You know, there's an interesting thing that happens for us. You know, work provides us many things. Financial security or money is only one piece of that. And so often I suggest that advisors and owners ask this question, what does work provide me other than just money? So we start to look at, right, you know, Scott and Marty, if we were just to brainstorm, what does work provide for you other than money?
You're putting us on the spot here?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you questions on your own show. How about that?
Well, I get my comedy routines from Scott. So, you know, actually, I'm going to be serious for a minute. That's actually very fulfilling, the work that we do at Contractor Succession. I mean, our vision is basically to hear 2 or 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road that because of the work we did with a contractor, they are now fulfilling their what they never even thought was their purpose in life. And that's what it means to me, you know, in addition to obviously financial rewards, but it means a lot more to me. Scott, would you like to answer her question since she's putting us on the spot?
Yeah, you caught me blind there, but I think I got an answer for you. In addition to Contractor Succession, which Marty and I have been working on together for a while, I also have a large mechanical contracting firm with about 45 employees. And so in that role, it's my joy comes from creating opportunities for others and watching them succeed. And then I've been able to translate that with Contractor Succession with our clients. So that's my short answer.
You know, your listeners might come up with some answers like, it's a place to go during the day, right? During this whole COVID time, having a place to go to be away from your spouse and kids, there's been some utility in that. For many of our owners, it's also the place where they have friendships. So their coworkers, their employees, their vendors are all friends. It creates structure. Power. Yeah. There are all kinds of things. We should be able to get somewhere between 12 and 15 distinct answers to that question, what does work provide for me other than money? And, you know, for an owner, when they exit and get a big sack of cash, those needs don't go away. So one of the things that was challenging for me out on the road is because I had let my business become so narrow, I had lost the connection to all of the other things that work provided for me. And it took me some time to come back to what were those things. We see that with owners all of the time. They get close to the end of their business. Their exit is underway, and all of a sudden something scares them, right? They pull back from the process, and it's because something else, not the money, has just crossed their mind. So I wrote a column a couple of months ago called Scary Things That Go Bump in the Night. And it's about those things that wake our owners up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they suddenly realize, oh, who am I going to hang out with when I sell my business? That's a real worry. And so the earlier we begin to prepare for our exit, the more we're able to discern what those needs are and how we will get them met on the other side of our exit. I didn't do that before I exited my own business, and it took a long time afterwards to gather it.
I see Scott smiling as you're saying those things. So, Scott, you have something to respond to what Denise just said to us?
Yeah, we've seen that with some of our clients and how they react to the reality of what that's going to be. You know, initially they come to us and say, it's that time, it's time for me to start planning an exit. And then they really start taking a look at what that's going to be. And panic, I think, sometimes sets in.
Yeah.
And
So I would assume, based on some of those things, you decided to write the book because you're answering or giving us more information of going down that path of the seller's journey. Again, the title of the book is The Seller's Journey. And remind everyone that our guest is Denise Logan, and you can find more about her at deniselogan.com. So is that why you wrote the book, to help people kind of navigate through some of this?
There were two things that led to the book. You know, when I came off the road from my motorhome adventure, I joined a friend's business, and he was preparing it for sale. And so over the next 10 years, we took that business to the market 3 times, and he could not let go. And at the time, I thought, isn't this interesting? You could be me and wait too long and exit in a super ugly way. Or you could be him and go before he was prepared and not be able to complete. So I left that business and did a research study to try to figure out what causes that drama for owners. What is the emotion that's under the surface? And I spent the next decade working with owners and their advisors to help them navigate that emotional obstacle. And then I wrote The Seller's Journey. And the story, The Seller's Journey is written as a business fable. So it's the story of an owner 1 year after he exits his business. And he goes on a trip across Glacier National Park with his banker, his lawyer, his wealth advisor, and the buyer who bought his firm. And while you might be thinking, oh no, that's going to go badly. Who's going to get shoved down the crevasse when you're traveling with your lawyer and your banker? But they all come back alive. As they cross the glacier, they're relating the physical obstacles they face to the emotional obstacles that he faced in letting go of his business. So it's designed as a tool for an owner to look ahead and see some of the things. It's not a tactical book. It's not designed as a here's how you do it. It's an opportunity to fall into the story and for an owner to recognize the places where they might get stuck.
Yes, it is a fantastic book. I sent you an email that I finished it yesterday. I read the book right before I do the interview. I had looked at it earlier. You've probably heard this, and people, other authors have probably heard some other. I literally couldn't put it down because it was. I was. Again, it connects so much to our work and to what we see, and you connected so much of it. The emotional part of it is just. I'm shocked by the work that we're doing, that Scott and I are doing. I mean, we knew that there was an emotional, because Scott, as an owner, we put Scott through some of these kind of exercises. Not that he's exiting his business immediately, but he had to go through some of these exercises, right, Scott? And it kind of even, you know, got you thinking about the future, right?
Well, it did, and I've actually purchased 2 of my own, so I'll share a little bit of that here in a minute. And it actually goes in two crazy different directions. So it's the sellers are all over the board, But ultimately, that emotional piece tends to get in there somehow in every sale.
Yeah. And the other thing, the part of the book is that the main character in the book is named Marty, and I really connected. I really connected with him. And another aside, Marty was married to Marjorie, who is my mother's name, by the way.
So we could do some psychology around that right now, couldn't we?
Yeah. So I'll have to. There were some real connections there.
That's actually kind of creepy. Let's go.
It might be, you know. So there's a couple of points. First of all, yeah, the emotional part of it. We'll come back to that. But walk us through a little more of the actual book. For instance, Marty, as it starts, Marty was considering his sale. Apparently, it was going along well. He had a seller whisperer working with him. Her name was Denise, I guess. Not Denise, it was Diane, excuse me. You are the seller's whisperer, Diane. But along the way, Marty apparently kind of fell apart. Is that pretty accurate, Denise?
Yeah, you know, every owner will leave their business voluntarily or involuntarily. And so isn't it better if we prepare for that well? In the story, which is actually based on a situation that I faced with a client, this particular client was six to eight weeks away from the closing and suddenly announced that he would not take a penny less than 9x EBITDA. Never mind that he had already signed a letter of intent at 6.2x. In that situation, the investment banker reached out to me and said, "I think my client went crazy." I'm like, "Yeah, it sounds like it. Let's figure out what scared him and what hidey hole he went into." So you see this play out in the story where Marty's original plan was to buy a sailboat and sail around the globe. You know, too often what we hear when we talk to an owner about exiting is, "What will you do with yourself?" Their answer is, "I'll travel and play golf." That is not an exit strategy. That is not a plan for your life. That will take you 3 months. Maybe. So Marty got close to his exit, and his wife, Marjorie, in the book, said, "I'm not doing that. I'm not sailing around the globe on a boat with you far away from my grandkids. That's not going to happen." Can you imagine being an owner who hasn't explored this deeply with your spouse and suddenly realize the thing you thought you were going to do, you're not going to be able to do? In that moment, Marty accidentally almost killed his own deal by asking for more money when it was never about the money to begin with. It was all about who was he going to be and what would he do after the exit.
Fear. The word fear comes out throughout the entire book. Correct, Denise? I mean, it was just fear of the unknown, like when I introduced you. I mean, when that gets close, they start to really think like, "Well, what am I going to do?" He was fearful, right?
Right. And, you know, fear comes up in so many different ways for us as well. So think about it. Even the very first time we poke at financials in an owner's business, they are filled with fear and shame. The worry is, "Oh my gosh, I've been the person who's known everything about my business. What if the person who's poking around in the financials finds something? Or what if I just look like a dope that I didn't know how to do something that someone's going to point out?" Mm-hmm. So our owners are naturally filled with fear and emotion around this transition. So often we treat it like the transaction. We're focused on the practical, tangible parts of it, without realizing this person has poured their entire life into this work.
Yeah. So think of it more of a transition as opposed to just a transaction. Is it okay to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we care for the transition that our clients are going through, they will have a better transaction. So we even think about the things that naturally come up in an exit. There's something that the owner is worried about, and they'll hide it, right? We're going to conceal what that thing is that we're worried about. And you see me do this in the book as well. But I don't know, Marty and Scott, do you have dogs? Do either of you have a dog?
Scott does.
So, Scott, you've seen this. I call this dog ears. Your dog hears something that he doesn't know what it is, and he kind of goes, tilts his head. What's that sound? When someone is concealing information in a deal, the other people in the deal, their bodies are naturally doing, what? What? That doesn't sound right. So think about an owner who is preparing to exit because he is ill and doesn't want anyone to know that he's ill. The story won't line up. So what you see throughout the book, and just, you know, from my 2 decades in this industry, is transparency and trust is what builds relationships. And relationships are what make deals close with ease. Mm. When there's no trust, the relationship is busted and the deal won't close.
Yeah, the other point I'd like for you to go a little deeper on, the fact that Marty did have his adventure, the owner that sold his business, a year after, and he stayed on, and he worked with one of his advisors. Actually, I think it was his investment. It was his private equity guy, right? I think Dan was the private equity guy. Mm-hmm. We're not giving the whole book away, honestly. We won't. You know, so it was a year after Marty closed his business, but he was there. So go a little deeper on that thought process, because Marty really stayed on and made serious contributions to that business along with the private equity guy. Am I accurate there?
Yeah. You know, often an owner is required to stay on for a period of time, a transition period after the sale of the business. It might be simply to get the new owner comfortable with things. It could also be as part of an earnout to be able to secure the balance of the payment. What I see is that lots of owners intend to stay on for that period, but they dread it. They worry about what will it be like to take direction from someone else or not be the sole decision maker. So part of what we wove into the story was what it can be like when you choose the right partner to acquire your business. Because money matters, don't get me wrong, but money is not the only deciding factor in choosing who is the right buyer for the firm. The right buyer is also someone who, if you are required to stay on for a period of time, is someone who you trust and who you will be able to work well with. So we see that play out in the book. You know, Marty was, like most owners, worried, will I even want to stay? But Marty had another secret fear that he had going on, which is, maybe I want to stay longer. What if I won't be able to let go then? And so one of the things that was so wonderful about writing the book was really showing the way these transactions can go. So many times owners have been scared by what they've heard in the market. They've heard, beware of the professionals who are involved in the deal. Don't trust the banker. The lawyer is going to screw you over. The buyer is a liar. There are all of these stories and myths out there. The seller's journey shows that actually, if you choose well who you engage with to sell your company and to help you through that journey, it can actually be a really exciting and wonderful process.
It can be rewarding. And actually, there's opportunities to have, a new opportunity, a second bite at that apple, maybe grow with that company, with that private equity. There's all kinds of different things. And Scott and I have found this, is that even decent sized companies, they really don't even know all the different options that they can take. Scott, address that a little bit for me, right? I mean, we have found that, correct?
A lot of the clients that we work with, come blind. I mean, they really have no idea whatsoever. So, you know, their first thought is, I've got to sell to somebody outside. Hopefully I'll find somebody that'll give me a lot of money for the business. But in the same token, then they'll say, but I want it to be a comfortable sale and I want to keep the culture and I want to keep all my employees. Well, then maybe you want to talk to your employees. Maybe that's an option as well. And so, have you discussed this with any of your family? You know, so there's so many ways that, to handle that. One of the things I wanted to add, Denise, to your conversation was, I mentioned that I purchased two businesses, one very early on. I really had no idea what I was doing. It was more of a kind of a stock transition, and there wasn't a whole lot of money transferred. The second one was it was a purchase of a company, and we had a very good connection. We had a great very close culture, and he was very comfortable with the sale. I found the purple unicorn. The gentleman I sold to did play golf almost every day, did travel, did play tennis, and 4 years later still doing all that same stuff. And so he didn't regret it for a second. In fact, we had a six-month, for him to stay on and work for me. And at the end of the first month, he goes, "If you're done with me, I'm ready to go." And it was hilarious, and it was fine because we had worked some things out. But he was more than willing to take off.
Not the normal case, though, we're finding out. Again, Denise Logan is our guest. You can find her at deniselogan.com. So let's give folks some concrete advice, or I'll call it advice. So who should these people be looking for? You are the seller whisperer. If I understand this correctly, you work with other professionals. Is that reasonably accurate? How? What kind of work do you do? And do you work with investment groups? Do you work with lawyers, CPAs? Explain your role and other professional advisors that our clients should be looking for.
Yeah. So what I would start with is you should be preparing to leave much earlier than you think you need to prepare to leave. Often we think, "I'll know when it's time." We don't wait until our children turn 18 to ask them what they're going to do next. We prepare them. And so that process of knowing when you're going to leave your business, my guess is 3 to 5 years before you think you're going to sell is when you should be preparing for that. So that means engaging with your counsel, with your attorney, with your CPA, with an advisor, either a business broker or an investment banker, an M&A advisor, who can help you look at both what do you need to do to prepare the business to transition and what do you need to do personally to transition. I think it's a tragedy when I see owners wait and they say, "All right, I want to sell now." It's never a now process. Yeah. This is not like selling a house where you put a sign in the front yard and people drive up with buckets of cash. It is a 6, 9, 18-month process to exit your business. So I think getting that mindset right is valuable. That's the starting point.
When we talked earlier, you said something about the number 5. That's kind of magical. Is it okay to talk about that? Or is this the right time to talk about that?
Yeah.
Go on. Talk to me about that. 5 years out, what's is there psychological reasoning behind that?
Yeah. So often when we ask owners, "When will you leave?" they'll say, "About 5 years from now." And the reason we choose 5 internally is it feels close enough to still be able to work toward, but far enough away that it's not pressing immediately against us. You know, there, as I said, we will all leave our businesses. And it is a fallacy to think that you know when you will leave your business. That is not within our control so much. You know, I was invited into a transaction years ago. It was a third generation family business. So grandfather, father, son. And the grandfather was out of the business mostly. He was in his 80s. The father was in his 60s. Son was in his 30s. And I was invited into that transaction because the son had gone to the father and said, "You'll turn this business over to me by the end of the year, or I'm going to take all the clients and start a new business and drive you under." Oh my, that was inartful as a way to communicate your desires, don't you think? So what I learned when I entered that transaction was that the son had been trying to have this conversation with his father for many years. And the father was basically giving him the hand, like, "Not now, not now, not now." If you have someone who you think is your successor and you are not having that conversation with them, you're setting yourself up or them. At some point, that young one will decide it's here or somewhere else. I see it on the flip side as well, with owners who expect that their children will take over the business without having had the conversation. So there was a business that I was invited into a conversation, family-owned business. Mother wanted to pass the business to their son. Father was ready to sell it to an outsider. And when I had the first conversation, I said, so has your son expressed an interest in taking over the business? Mind you, he was a sophomore in college. And so they said, oh, he for sure wants to take it. On the side, the dad said to me, he's a dumbwit. Like, he's not going to take over this business. So we had an internal conversation that was not happening. I met with the son, at which point he said to me, if I have to get three PhDs to stay in school until they sell that business, that's what I'm planning to do. Also not an effective strategy, right? So what I did was facilitate a conversation between them as a family so that the son could communicate, I don't want to go into this business, which was a huge relief to the father and a huge loss for the mom. So we did some grief work with her, and then she was able to let go. But otherwise, they might have held that business for years and years and years.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. So we deal with a lot of these things, Scott and I do. So are you willing to join us in some of these engagements? Will you help us and our clients through some of these trials and tribulations? Is the answer yes?
Absolutely. So, you know, the truth is that I do more speaking and writing now because I want to be able to help people understand what their clients are going through and for owners to feel the trust with their advisors. While I can always help and step into a transaction to help owners and advisors bridge that gap, my goal is to elevate the conversation about it in our community so that owners feel safe communicating to you what they would otherwise tell me.
So we are an advisor, contractor succession. This is what we do. And we hear repeatedly that it's 3 to 5 years out. So we hear that all the time. So Scott will have to get some kind of feedback to that and give him what we learned from the seller whisperer, our friend Denise Logan. So Denise Logan's book, again, is The Seller's Journey.
Right.
If you are...
And it tends to... That 3 to 5 tends to expand.
Yeah, it tends to.
3 to 5 is, and that's why what I would say is 3 to 5 is a magical number, right? And I put magic in quotes because it is a trick that we use to keep ourselves moving forward. And so the real answer is, could you exit your business today? If you are not prepared to exit your business today, what must you be doing between now and then to prepare? And that could be putting tax planning in place. Because as we all know, it's not what the business sells for. It's how much you keep that makes the difference. What are the processes that need to be in place so that the business is not just the owner? Because a business that is just the owner is not a saleable business. It needs to be a business that has procedures and processes and other people. That's what makes it sellable. I think it's also about understanding what the current valuation of your business is and what you need it to be and how to get there. So the 3 to 5 year mark is often, I say, that is a flag that as an owner, if you hear yourself saying, oh, I'll sell in 3 to 5 years, that should be a warning for you in that moment. What are the steps that I need to take and who are the people that I need to be engaging with now to be prepared? Because I may not have 3 to 5 years. I may have an offer that comes in earlier, or I may have a health crisis, or we may have COVID that otherwise would have trashed your business. So what are the things that you're doing now? I have a little saying, I call it the oh my syndrome. One more year. When I hear an owner say one more year, I say, oh my, all right, let's figure out what needs to happen in that year To me, that's a flag. It's a warning that tells me that's an owner who has an underlying issue that they don't know how to address, and they're kicking the can down the road.
So we need to wrap up. Denise, what a pleasure. Scott and I learned some things here. I was writing down some notes. I saw Scott writing down some notes. We have some new information to share with our clients, Scott. And folks, I strongly suggest you buy this book, The Seller's Journey, and certainly give us a call. We would be we're primarily in the contractor space. You know, the HVAC, plumbing, electrical, roofers. But we'd love to talk to anybody. You can just go to our website, which is contractorsuccession.com. But buy this book, read this book, then call us. I think we could have a really terrific conversation. So Denise Logan, thank you so much for being part of the Contractor Succession Podcast.
I appreciate it very much. And for your listeners, it's who you choose to take this journey with you that makes the difference about how you end your business.
Thank you for listening to the Contractor Succession Podcast. You can learn more about us at our website, contractorsuccession.com. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.